Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Well, life and love, these are big topics. My guest today, for I think the fourth time, Dr. Dudley Danoff, author of Penis Power, we're going to talk about these big topics and how you can have them in your life and to the fullest extent. And I'm so happy to have you back again, Dr. Danoff. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. It's very, very good to be back.
Thank you. And tomorrow is my birthday, so I have an extra perspective.
Happy birthday to you.
Thank you. So my perspective has to do with kind of looking at life and looking back and how important life is and love. And when we are sexual, I think we can feel the most alive. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I have a big section in my book, which I entitled Staying Sexy at Any Age.
Yes.
And, you know, it's different. There's certainly a difference as you get older, but it's no less satisfying.
It's no less satisfying, indeed. Part of my perspective is, you know, I think back, there's just no need to feel defeated for a woman. Women are a little more sensitive, and I just came back from my college reunion, so I had a perspective there, too. But to feel defeated at 40, 50, or 60, and many women, if they stay open to love and sexuality, will have the greatest time in the second half of life, and maybe even to enjoy the best sex after even the age of 40 or 50.
And I, you know, in my clinical experience, I couldn't agree with you more. And when you think about it for a moment, most women who are married, raising children, trying to be a good mother, a good wife, a good lover, the plate, the menu is very full. And as the children leave the house, there's more time to devote to her better half. There's more time to devote to herself, her own development. And in order to stay young and be sexual, you know, you have to have an enthusiastic and willing partner. It goes both ways.
But it sure does.
There's no rush. There's no worry about being caught by a child in an uncompromising position. You know, the old story goes, I can't believe I saw my parents doing what they were doing, and they whipped me when I sucked my thumb.
That's funny. Let me back up a little bit and tell our listeners. The last time you were on this program was February 3rd, and they can go and listen to that archived show. And by the way, it's also archived, and you can listen to it on sexpert.com. This is Dr. Ava Cadell's website, and she took an image of your book, Penis Power, The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health, and so our entire interview is also archived there. Did you know that, Dr. Danoff?
Well, I didn't, but I'm so delighted that it's reaching a wider audience. And, you know, for those of your listeners who don't know me, I am a mainstream urologist. I just came up with this funny title, Penis Power, The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health. And I always have to remind people that the word penis is not a pejorative word. A penis to a urologist is what a stomach is to a gastroenterologist. So a lot of the mainstream press has been put off by that word. I mean, can you imagine in the 21st century?
I'm not too surprised, and I was about to give your credentials because people need to know about it. You have helped so many people, so many couples. You're a board-certified urologist, and to achieve emotional intimacy and physical satisfaction. And I know you're a urologist to the stars in many cases and celebrities.
And, well, I mean, you have to remember that stars and celebrities put their pants on the same way we ordinary folks do, one leg at a time. My office just happens to be at the Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, which is Beverly Hills, West Hollywood. It's the heart of the movie industry. So we have a lot of industry folks as patients in our office. But I would say the overwhelming number of these people that we all see as stars and are recognizable in movies and television are really just ordinary folks. And if you tell them they have a prostate cancer, they're just as worried as the next fellow, and they're just as troubled with erectile dysfunction and all of the problems of male and female relationships. So almost all of them are ordinary folks doing a job, and they just happen to be in the limelight. I mean, that's their biz.
That's their biz, yeah. And, of course, it's so important for you to keep the confidentiality, which you do.
Oh, yes.
Of course, and yet in your book you have blurbs, and we don't know if they're your patients or not, but you've got blurbs from Larry King, and I think Johnny Mathis, and so on, so some well-known folks, but you've helped them. And that really leads me to my next question, which I've asked you before in previous programs, but I think it's worth reviewing again. Why did you write this book?
Well, because I think that the public in general are woefully ignorant about the male sexual apparatus. There's a lot of misconceptions out there. There's a lot of wrong information. There's a lot of information we pick up on the street, porno sites, and it hardly characterizes the true nature of the male beast. So I wrote this book in very simple-to-read, everyday language. It's certainly tongue-in-cheek. It's funny. I mean, how could you be looking at penises your whole professional life and not have a sense of humor, I must say?
I know.
and it's very insightful, and it's very, very helpful. So people have said to me over and over, I wish I had read this book 10 years ago. It's all about self-confidence. It's not about size. It's not about performance. It's not about imagining things that are unreal. It's not about things which are not age-appropriate. It's not a book about positions. It's not a how-to book. But if you read it, you certainly will be better at what you're trying to accomplish in terms of your interpersonal relationships. And I don't care if you're married, heterosexual, bisexual, homosexual, any partner profile described in my book.
And your book, Penis Power, also includes women. For instance, you have the top 10 complaints of women. But I was just looking at your book again. In your acknowledgments, it's very sweet. You say, and dare I forget to thank the women who have influenced my life, both through my practice and personal endeavors, for their unique perspective and wisdom. They have allowed me to express my ideas with a passion not otherwise possible. Honestly, Dr. Danoff, you are such a gentleman and such a fine man, and I'm so happy that I got to meet you last year,
June. You know, Deanna, you know, I didn't start out that way.
Say more. That's interesting.
I went to an all-male college, Princeton.
Princeton, yeah.
And in my early years as a young surgeon, single, in New York with a few bucks in my pocket, I was a womanizer. I was very, very penocentric. But I must say, you know, married now more than 40 years to the same the beautiful woman, has taught me a lot and has allowed me to write that paragraph and genuinely believe it.
Yes, and I also had the privilege of meeting your wife, and she's lovely and so accomplished in her own way as a singer, an international singer.
It's true.
And she's taken good care of you over the years.
And I think it goes a lot to have a long-term relationship with anybody. I always say that you have to be a great poker player. You have to know when to hold them, when to fold them. You have to know when to speak up. You have to know when to shut up. You have to know when to see. You have to know when to be blind. You have to know when to hear and, you know, be deaf. So it's a great, great balancing act. And I don't know how you teach that to a young person. It comes from experience. It's
exactly.
really, really like being a great poker player.
Exactly. It would be difficult to teach it to a young person. You know, we want to talk, and this was your idea, and I love it, about life and love. And I think, you know, when we talk about love, some people separate out sex from love, but really, loving means caring. And what is more caring than wanting our lover or mate to experience the fullest expression of his or her sexuality?
Well, there's no, you know, there's no, I can't speak for a woman. I can only speak for men and a man. And a man, a physician who treats, erectile dysfunction, but also a man who has a long-term relationship. And it's all about satisfying your partner. There is no greater self-satisfaction for a man than to know that he's satisfying his partner.
And I agree. And for the woman, for him to be skilled and loving, and for the woman to be responsive and enthusiastic, and for him to be able to facilitate bringing her to orgasm is just the best of all worlds, isn't it?
Well, I agree. You know, I often have a little mental list about how to satisfy your partner. I'll just go through the list, and then we can sort of pick the topic and discuss each one with a little bit more depth. But I think the first thing is you've got to banish self-doubt. And you have to have in your mind, as a man, it's not just about bringing a woman to orgasm, but to multiple ecstatic, earth-shattering orgasms. You know, that's too much pressure. So you've got to banish self-doubt. You've got to, as a man, you've got to understand that every man has failed to satisfy his partner at one time or another. I think the third thing that I always like to bring up is you have to understand that arousal is an individual issue, and you can't compare yourself to anybody else. And I think another thing which is very, very important is communicate. Communicate what you like. Hopefully your partner will communicate what they like. And fifthly and most importantly, don't be afraid to experiment. So I think if we cover those five areas, those are the key areas in really satisfying your partner.
I absolutely agree with you. Lots of people have pleasure anxiety, so they can't stay open and they can't stay relaxed enough to be really aroused and to do these things.
And one of the most common causes for ED, particularly in the younger population, is not so much pleasure anxiety, but what I call performance anxiety.
Sure, sure.
Am I going to be up to my partner's expectations? Am I going to be up to my own expectations? And if you have one bit of self-doubt that enters the formula, it's like the dog that's chasing his tail in ever-decreasing circles and really disappears up as you-know-what. So it's negative feedback loop, and it's terrible.
Yeah, a negative feedback loop. And then if a man experiences one erection failure, it often just accelerates, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And you've got to break that, you know, that terrible downward spiral. And, you know, interesting, Deanna, one of the ways that we do it, we sometimes will prescribe one of the PDE5 inhibitors, the Viagra,
right.
Cialis, a group of drugs, sometime in a man who really doesn't have any physiologic erectile dysfunction, but just to get him over that self-doubt and break that concentric circle downward. So it's a very legitimate way to use the drug.
I agree, and I often, while I, in my position, I can't, with my licensing, I can't prescribe these, but I work with a naturopath, sexual medicine, and also a physician. So, yes, it helps men not only with ED, but sometimes with premature ejaculation, too, just to have a little more confidence.
Exactly, exactly. And you know the cure for premature ejaculation.
What is it?
Have more sex.
Yes, that's right.
Many times I tell some of my youngest patients, you know, who have premature ejaculation and who have the ability to have, you know, five orgasms, you know, in one 24-hour period, I said, you know, pleasure yourself and then go out on your date. I said, you know, you will definitely cure your premature ejaculation.
Yes. Yes, so just like in that movie, Something About Mary,
right?
Ben Stiller's and Cameron Diaz, must be 15 years ago now, he masturbated before he went out on a date with her, and the famous scene where she thought it was hair gel. Remember that? It was funny.
I do. Look, it is not that uncommon a practice, and from a health professional, I could tell you it works.
Of course. Because, and also, not only for PE, but for ED, because erections are good for erections, in terms of the blood flow and the nitric oxide and so on.
But also, sex is one of the great cardiovascular exercises ever invented.
Absolutely.
Now, that doesn't mean that having sex is an Olympic sport where you're put on a 0 to 10 and you get 2/10 of a reduction for doing something that nobody likes. But it's great for your physical fitness, your leg strength, your arm strength, cardiovascular, chest, upper abdomen, pelvis. It's just fantastic, to say nothing of the psychological well-being of a wonderful afternoon of lovemaking.
Yes, because when a man fully satisfies a woman, I think he frees her from harboring negative feelings such as frustration, disappointment, and anger. And when he fulfills her, then her passion will be released and she will be naturally motivated to fulfill him.
Absolutely.
So they'll both benefit from increased desire as they both enjoy satisfaction.
Yeah, I truly believe not only in terms of sexuality, but in terms of the conduct of my personal life, that the more you give of yourself, the more you get back in return.
Absolutely.
I try to teach that to my children. I try to teach that to my students. I try to teach that to my partners. And I know in my lifetime, it has never, ever failed. Now, you know, you can't give the house away. I mean, if you're...
Right.
I went to China a number of years ago with my teenage son, and, you know, I have professional beggars everywhere who look, you know, horribly deformed, and they're hired by a company to be in all the strategic tourist places.
Yeah.
And my son wanted to give, you know, every one of those people a dollar. I said, you know, son, you're going to break the bank. I understand. There is a limit to giving, but within the confines of good common sense, you cannot give of yourself enough.
I certainly agree, and it helps a lot. And this is why a lot of people have better sex when they're a little bit older, because they have more self-confidence and thus more sexual confidence. And they've learned more about communication, even about sexuality and honesty. And so that helps. That helps to have better sex. So women after 50... sometimes are more assertive, and men are more romantic. Men have learned to slow down. You talk about that in your book.
Yes, I do.
Slow down, the 10 things that women complain about.
By changing that elusive, I don't know how many of my colleagues, you know, we sit around at lunch and talk, and some of them are getting sick, and they're saying, my God, if I only knew what I knew now, I can't believe I worked so hard and didn't enjoy. And so it's very, very important to stop and smell the roses, no matter how you are driven. And, you know, if you take the time off and then you come back to work, somehow the time that you've missed becomes compressed. So nothing less gets done. It's just compressed into a shorter period of time. And you've just got to slow down and love making and caring for a partner and enjoying every moment is priceless.
It is priceless. And you write about this in your book. Everybody, this book is so excellent, Penis Power, The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health. But he writes under the 10 complaints, number 6, my husband is a wham-bam, thank you, ma'am kind of guy, and all he knows is a missionary position. And you write that that if he could just savor the experience by slowing down and making each moment last. And you can even ask him, you write, what's the rush? Teach him that the extra few minutes of loving foreplay or passionate intercourse will bring both of you heightened pleasure. Such good advice, Dr. Danoff, such good advice.
Well, I think so, and a lot of people take it to heart, and I think it's something worth paying attention to.
Yeah, and to slow down. I actually, in the 33 years I've been in practice, I often use those two words, slow down, to couples, because... And younger guys have trouble with this because you write about this too, they're nervous about their performance and their ability. Yeah, premature ejaculation, whatever else. So talk a little bit about that, if you will.
Well, the younger men are particularly prone to performance anxiety. I mean, every man wants to catch, the winning touchdown in the closing minutes of the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. So they're comparing themselves to others. They're acting like sex, as I said a moment ago, is an Olympic event, which it isn't. They're not focused on their partner. It's all about me or a lot about me, me, me. Many of them are driven in their career. So they're hardworking, hard drinking. There's hardly any time for lovemaking and passion and a quiet moment. Young men, quiet moments don't appeal to young men. I think that's one of the great benefits, as I see in many of the men that I treat, as they get older. You know, they have time to play 18 holes of golf two or three times a week. They have time for a leisurely dinner. They have time, you know, to sit over a cup of coffee and chat. Younger men just... don't seem to have that privilege.
I agree. And then you add on to it, this was Freud right that women have penis envy? And you have answered, women have penis curiosity, not penis envy. Men have penis envy. Because they're, as you said just a moment ago, comparing men are often, especially younger men, comparing themselves to others.
Oh, absolutely. Men are obsessed with size, how long, how wide. I've been quoted a number of times. I don't know if I've given you this little story on the program before, but if I have, it's definitely worth repeating.
Oh, definitely. Yes, repeat.
I've seen more penises than can fill the Rose Bowl.
Yes.
And I've seen many of the women attached to those penises, meaning as their boyfriend, their lover, their husband. And not once in all my years of practice, which are not inconsiderable, has a woman said to me, Dr. Danoff, could you make my man's penis longer, fatter, wider? Not once, but they have asked me, can you make it a little firmer? and attach it to a sweeter guy.
Right.
And that's really, and then of course they add, preferably with an American Express Platinum card, but that's... Oh, yeah, men are obsessed. Is mine bigger than his? Is my Porsche faster than your Lamborghini? Is my, you know, Rolls Royce faster than your Jaguar? And women just care about a firm man who is compassionate and caring and generous of heart and spirit. And that's been my observation.
And it's been my observation, too, having seen thousands and thousands of couples over the years in my practice. Yeah, women really desire their guys to listen a little better, to be more compassionate, to be more empathic, to slow down. Yeah, and they don't want, they're usually very, unless the guy has a micro, I've never encountered this, you have, I'm sure, in your business, but a micro penis.
Yeah,
most penises are fine, and it's how the guy uses it, as the saying goes. And
that's, by the way, that this concept of micro penis, it exists, but it's very, very, very rare. And, you know, physiologically and anatomically, as you know, the most sensitive part of the penis by a mile is the tip or the glands.
Yeah.
The most sensitive part of the female anatomy, exclusive of the elusive G-spot, is the clitoris. And the clitoris is, you know, right up front and center. So,
right.
You know, for that reason, penis size is not as important as lots of people think they are. And I always say it's the power of positive thinking. A man's penis is only as reliable and as long and as firm as he thinks it is. And if there's any doubt in his mind, then he's going to be a loser. So it's all.
And that's part of penis power, isn't it?
The power of positive thinking is applied to man's favorite organ or favorite body part.
Sure. These are important things for people to realize, and yet it's very hard to get a lot of folks out of that mindset. I'm sure you've never heard a woman ask, make my guy's penis bigger, wider, fatter, all of that. And you do talk in your book about how dangerous it is to do a penis enlargement and how it doesn't really work.
Well, that's true. And it's called phalloplasty, PH, as in phallus.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that, unlike a rhinoplasty, or commonly known as a nose job or a breast augmentation, the penis, as everyone knows, is not a static organ. So it can go from an organ which is quite small and flaccid to something which is quite large, impressive, and firm. And there's no grafting material, you know, that can withstand that contraction and enlargement and enhancement that will stick, that will work. So if you put silicone or any of the injectables in, they migrate, and it's just horrible. And the most unhappy patients that I have seen in my professional lifetime are patients who have undergone phalloplasty. It's just horrible. And I always say that if a man wants to have his penis enlarged, he gets to what I call the IPE. He goes to his nearest CVS pharmacy or stationery store. He buys a magnifying glass. He unwraps it. He puts it over his penis, and he looks through it. And that's IPE, the instant penis enlarger. believe me, be a lot happier.
A lot happier than going through the pain of surgery.
Terrible, terrible. The results are ghastly, ghastly, absolutely.
Yeah.
I strongly advise, and I've been involved as an expert witness in a number of lawsuits in which absolutely unscrupulous physicians have subjected their patients to phalloplasties. It's unforgivable.
Yeah, and then you have to sort of do these patients of yours ever come to try to correct some of the damage?
To try to correct what's been done?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, we have done, considerable corrective surgery, but we're very, very limited in what we can do to correct these deformities.
Mm.
It's the material that they used for grafting are embedded in the tissues, and it's very disfiguring to try to remove that material. The material migrates, lumpy, bumpy, just ugly. So one other thing that...
Before you go on, I have a little bit of a joke about this. The warning about this is on eBay. Be careful what you buy. If you buy stuff online, check out the seller carefully. A friend has just spent $295 on a penis enlarger. The bastards sent him a magnifying glass. The only instructions were, do not use in direct sunlight.
Well, it's very true. I actually mentioned that in my book. I didn't mention it was for sale on eBay.
Yeah.
But, P.T. Barnum said, a sucker is born every minute.
Every minute, right.
I would mention one thing.
Please.
So when you think anatomically of the way the penis emerges from a male's body, it emerges from under the pubic bone. The pubic bone is the pelvic bone in the middle. If you reach down, you feel it. So if you've got a guy that's 20, 30, 40 pounds overweight, what he's got a big penis, a large belly, and then he's got also what we call a prepubic fat pad. In other words, maybe 2 or 3 inches of fat overlying the pubic bone. So if you look at that fellow, without his clothes on, he looks like he might have a very short, stubby penis. But in fact, that penis has to traverse 4 or 5 or even 6 inches of prepubic fat before it sees the light of day. So lots of fat guys, if they could lose a little weight, would, quote, enlarge their penis automatically without doing anything else. That's why you never see a fat guy in a porno movie. It doesn't work.
That's right. It doesn't work. And also, of course, being overweight creates all kinds of other health problems.
Of course.
Yeah. So let's talk about men facilitating women to reach orgasm, because when a woman can reach orgasm, she is so much happier. And of course, many women are not informed or confident enough to tell men what they need to do, because I'm always encouraging pre-orgasmic women to masturbate to find out how they can bring themselves to orgasm. And most know how to do that, whether it's with their fingers. The clitoris has about 8,000 nerve fibers, and their fingers, or a sex toy. And I've found that many women need the extra vibration if they haven't masturbated as teenagers, because maybe they haven't laid down the nerve channels from the genitals to the brain about orgasms. Do you think that's a possibility, that if they haven't masturbated as teenagers, that they haven't, they're less likely to be orgasmic?
I don't hold myself out as being an expert on female orgasms. I think as a medical person dealing with ED, I think what you say and the principles that you've expressed, I think, are valid principles. I am not aware of any controlled studies, in which you take a group of women who have not masturbated as teens and against the group that has, this so-called double-blind study. But certainly intuitively, what you says makes a lot of sense. So on the male side, when we talk about satisfying our partners, I emphasize communication.
Of course, yes.
Look, you can do it by trial and error, but that's sometimes a very slow process, takes years. But you'll never know what satisfies your partner. Do you like this? Do you like that? Please, I wish you wouldn't do that. Is it okay if I do this? So the the combinations are infinite, but unless you sort of speak up in a very kind and gentle and non-threatening way, you can never get that message across and never get the answers that you should get.
Very, very true. And that's why some women, as they become a little more confident in life, self-confidence, they feel, and they know a little more what they want, they feel more confident in speaking up. I always say that if you don't communicate these wants and needs and desires, it's for your partner, it's like going on a treasure hunt without any clues. You've got to talk about these things, and it's very hard for a lot of people. I mean, I see this all the time in my practice.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly would agree with you with communication. Look, communication is the key to any interpersonal relationship, you know, with your kids, yeah, with your friends, with your business associates, with the people in the supermarket. I mean, you've got to communicate. And if you fail to communicate, you are not going to be successful as a human being. So I think that applies across the board. I mean, I think it's particularly true in sexuality, but I also think it's true as a rule in general life.
So that may, I absolutely agree with you, and that may be the part of the answer to why is it that so many people are still suffering from a lack of sexual fulfillment. I think that's probably at the top of the list. They don't communicate with each other.
And I also think, you know, right up there along with the failure to communicate is this sense of selflessness. In other words, having the ability to give of yourself to another person. And I think if you are going to be a successful lover and enjoy, you know, all of the pleasures that love offers, you have to be a selfless person. Now, you know, I don't mean that you're selfless to the point of sacrificing your life. I mean, there are boundaries to selflessness. But I think those boundaries have to be very broad and very wide and very deep. So I am all 100%, or as they say, all in on the concept of selflessness.
Yes. The classic narcissist, it's usually a man in the United States, although there are some women. So they often fashion themselves or think that they are good lovers, but it's like they want, just like narcissists looking at his reflection in the pool, according to Greek myth, but he wants the reflection back from his lover that he's such a fabulous lover, technique-wise, but he isn't really getting to the heart, to thinking about his partner, noticing her responses, being an intuitive lover, because he often doesn't have the capacity for compassion or empathy, really getting into his lover.
You know, we have sort of two kinds of encouragement is what I see. You know, it's like when your kid is in Little League and, you know, he's fumbling the ball and he throws the ball over first base in a while. But, you know, hey, Johnny, great throw, great catch, great run. I mean, every man likes to hear, oh, baby, you're the best. Oh, baby, that's the biggest one I ever felt. Oh, baby, you know, you're wow. So, you know, and men love to hear that stuff, you know. Now, the question is, are you genuine in your praise? Or is your praise worthy of an Academy Award? So, I mean, you know, men love that stuff. You know,
of course.
But at the end of the day, a man for a lasting relationship said, "Does my partner really mean it, or is it just a big bag of BS?"
Right.
So,
right.
I think praise is wonderful, but it's got to be sincere praise.
It's got to be. And of course, the best relationships the best intimate relationships really do have emotional intimacy, authenticity, humor, all of that. And then that leads to even greater physical intimacy.
Yeah, there's no question that humor, I also think another factor which is quite important is what I call space. So two people who are intimately related, so when they're intimate, you know, the intimacy is inseparable, but when they're not intimate, they each have to have space in their own lives to develop those things that they enjoy, that they excel at, that they want. And, you know, my interests do not necessarily have to coincide with the long-term interests of my wife, who is, you know, my life's partner.
Yeah.
I love golf. She thinks it's a big bore, you know. She loves the kitchen and cooking and preparing, and I just like to eat the stuff.
I remember a previous discussion we had on this program. You said that your wife has given you many salads as part of the dinner you get.
That's
and
right.
She keeps giving you new salads, which is amazing.
Yeah, I you know, we all try to stay in good shape, and especially
sure.
At age, you know, you. So we pretty simply, you know, usually a salad and a main dish,
yeah.
Fish and chicken, fish, occasionally some meat, but it always starts with a salad.
Yeah.
And I've been married more than 40 years, and I often say I never ate the same salad ever in 40 years. Now, what's in a salad? Lettuce, tomatoes, a cucumber, you know, a celery. But somehow it's chopped, it's diced, it's sliced, it's prepared, the different dressing, never the same. We say, how do you do this?
Right? Hey, Dr. D, you're a lucky guy. I know you know that.
Well, a little luck, you know. And a lot of hard work.
And a lot of hard work. And that brings us maybe back to the, we were especially going to talk about life and love. And these are big topics. But if you look back on your life and the love you've had with your beautiful wife, and as I mentioned earlier, I've met her. She's just lovely. And you are fabulous, Dr. D. I'm just...
Don't stop talking now.
I know. It's... Don't, you know, it's so important to express appreciation and gratitude, isn't it?
Absolutely. There's nothing kinder to a person's ears than thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely. And so many people, so many of your patients and mine, too, have stopped saying what they appreciate and value. And I know that's probably one thing that's kept your love life so vibrant is that you appreciate your wife and you tell her.
Absolutely. You know, every day in some small way, I may not be big with gifts and flowers, but I'm very, very big with my sentiment and caring and showing my thanks in many, many ways, opening the car door, even, oh, my goodness, you came all the way around from your side.
Yeah.
It's the smallest little gesture, the gesture of respect, the gesture of patience. All those are thank you gestures. And if you can bring yourself to do that on a regular basis, the rewards will be considerable.
Well, I agree. Absolutely. I'm just as happy as I could be in my own life, looking forward to my birthday tomorrow, but just because I've got such a good man in my life, and we're engaged, and we're going to get married, but we don't have a date yet, but meantime, we might as well be married for the care and consideration and appreciation and even the hot sex that we continue to have. It's just quite wonderful. And I'm very, very grateful for it. You know, I'm back to the perspective. And you can look back on your life and see what things have informed your life as you've gone along. You know, and some of the sad parts, too.
Absolutely.
My last husband died, and it was very unexpected. And so, you learn from all of this. You learn from your grief. You learn from your joys. And hopefully you then can create some balance.
Well, a great man, far more intelligent than I am, talked about that learning experience from the good and the bad. And I paraphrase it by saying, if you do not learn from your experience or your past mistakes, you're destined to repeat them.
And absolutely.
Conversely, if you don't learn from all the good moments in your life, you're destined not to repeat them. So learning, nothing beats experience. You know, we were talking the other day in our hospital about the so-called older surgeon.
Yes.
And, as an older surgeon begins to lose some of his physical ability, his manual dexterity, is he forced to retire, or do those many, many years of surgical experience and judgment, outweigh the diminution in a man's physical ability to do something? So you have to balance this wisdom of age with certain physical infirmities of age. There's a lot of ways to compensate.
Well, now, so, Dr. D, you do a lot of surgery.
Yes, I do, every day.
Every day. And so, and you're an older man, and so can you speak personally about this?
Surely. So I've been, an active surgeon for more than 40 years.
Uh-huh.
And although, I don't have the stamina, the strength, I don't have a tremor. I'm ambidextrous. My eyesight is flawless. I hear okay, but in my field, there are certain complex operations that I stay away from. In other words, I may assist in a robotic surgery, but I do not want to be responsible for sitting at the console of a robot when we're doing a radical prostatectomy.
Yes.
So I leave, as I say, the heavy lifting to my younger partners. They're grateful because the majority of patients come to see me, and my patients feel confident. They say, I've got young Dr. Jones here, graduated from, Princeton, Yale, and Harvard on my team, and he played Nintendo as a kid, and I'm the robotic, the arm of the robot. I said, you don't want somebody that never touched a Nintendo console.
Right.
Kind of robot. So, yeah, you have to do what is age appropriate and skill appropriate. So there are certain endoscopic procedures that I do far better than the younger guys, and those are the things that I concentrate on. But, yeah, I've certainly modified, my surgical menu and what I do on a day-to-day basis as I get a little bit older, surely.
And I bet the younger surgeons so appreciate that you are a mentor and an assisting surgeon.
Oh, yeah. Look, there's no question. He may have robotic skills, but I'm looking in the operating field, and I'm seeing things, that it's going to take him another 30 years to recognize. Watch that. Oh, do you see that over there? Look at how that's invading that. So
uh-huh.
Combination of sort of the young bull and the old dog, I think the patients benefit.
Of course they do. And I think, like in my practice, I really believe in the mind-body approach to sexual dysfunction.
Right.
And that's why I collaborate with physicians and naturopaths who specialize in sexual medicine. Because, especially for women, they need the mind-body approach. A woman can get all the hormone replacement therapy or testosterone or whatever, and if she doesn't like her partner, forget it.
Right. I agree.
So we have to do, I have to help them overcome their anger and their disagreements and all of that before we can even get into the bedroom and the sex therapy.
So we always say that the greatest aphrodisiac is love. And the great the greatest anti-aphrodisiac is anger.
Oh, isn't that the truth?
It is.
And in fact, talk, if you will, because I know a little bit about the amygdala, and it's where fear and anxiety lies. And so if a woman has a lot of fear and anxiety, and if she's not feeling safe, then she will often not be able to feel sexually responsive.
And I think the same holds true for a man.
Yes.
If you got the adrenaline flowing, it's vasoconstricts, blood flow diminished, distracted, your heart beats racing. It's not that Hawaiian scene you want with the beautiful music and the South Pacific wind blowing in your hair and the beautiful scent of orchids.
And that's, of course, why lots of people have better sex when they're on a vacation, on a holiday, and particularly in Hawaii or someplace where you are more relaxed and don't have all of the pressures.
Sure. The cold and the warm, you know, that's one of the reasons why the Klondike is not a favorite honeymoon spot. You know, you have to have
exactly.
The warm, you have to have the vasodilation.
Yes.
All of those things. The physical surroundings are quite important as well.
Yes, and I know that women need to feel safe and relaxed. And so if her man is protecting her and making her feel like he cares about her and that she's really safe with him, she's much more likely to be responsive. And so I think it can help. Men can develop their intuitive abilities and their overall consciousness and awareness of women, as well as of themselves. And because when his woman is sexually fulfilled, he has one of his greatest rewards.
Yeah, I think instinctively, if you follow the theory of Darwin, so yes, a man is a protector.
Mm-hmm.
Most successful men are both protectors and nurturers. So some
yes.
say, you know, a man has to have his manly side, but he also, to be a man, has to have his womanly side. Now, I'm not saying go so far as Bruce Jenner. I think that's a little
isn't
over
that amazing? Yeah.
I mean, but when you listen to the guy, I mean, you know, I personally think he's a little nuts, but, you know, what he says, you could see that in his mind, it makes a lot of sense. You know, I always felt like a woman. I'm not a homosexual. I'm a woman who likes women.
Well,
crazy,
well, now we're going into another area. Transgendered people. But, you know, I'm remembering, Dr. D, that in 1994, I went to Singapore, and it was the World Congress on Impotence. It was still called that then. And I was one of two sex therapists. There were urologists from around the world. And there was a sex therapist from Italy, and there was myself. And at that time, 1994, I thought, wow, you know, these urologists, not like you, by the way, of course, are just kind of like plumbers, you know, put the lead in the pencil and get it up, and they weren't considering the relationships. But the point I wanted to make here is that I heard a urologist from Singapore, and he had slides, and he was doing the transgendered surgeries.
Right.
And he became first aware, he first was convinced to do these surgeries by gay men who were dressed as women to go out at night. And the police in Singapore would arrest them and put them in jail if they, through the dress, they felt a penis. So these guys were coming to him and saying, we've got to, you know, have the surgery. And these were also guys, and this is what convinced me, that it is a man who feels trapped in the wrong body.
Right.
That even as teenagers, when the hormones, according to Lou Anne Brizantine, if testosterone were beer, when a boy is 9, he has about a cup of testosterone. By the time he's 15, he's got 2 gallons. So testosterone is raging, right?
Sure.
And these guys don't want to touch their penises because they feel like it's not a part of who they really feel they are.
I mean, as you say, if we talk about transgender, you know, that is a whole subject for another day. I will say, as a urologist who early in my career was involved in some transgender surgery, it is very, very, very difficult surgery. It's very fraught with multiple surgical complications. It's very intricate, multiple operation surgery. To say to somebody considering it to think twice would be the understatement by an experienced health professional. I am not a psychiatrist and don't hold myself out to be one, but when you make a decision to do some transgender surgery, I mean, you've got to think 10 times and be very cautious about your medical choices. So, again, that's a very heavy subject and not the subject for today.
Not the subject for today. But that's very interesting, and I'm not surprised that, because you have so many talents, that you were involved with a sort of, I can understand that it would be very complicated.
Very.
Oh, my goodness.
And very fraught. And very fraught, not only is the surgery complicated, but there are many, many surgical complications, meaning problems following the surgery and because of the surgery.
Yeah.
And whether you do it one way or the other, it's very, very disfiguring. And the results are not very satisfactory from an aesthetic point of view.
Yes. Yes. So we are coming to the end of the program, and in another 4 to 6 months, if you're willing, Dr. D, I'd sure like to have you back.
I wish I could say that in 4 or 6 months we have some new sexual secrets that we've culled from the world. I'm going to try to get my little basket and save them up for you, Deanna.
All right. Thank you so much. And for people that want to, I'll put the summary of the show up on the website, but for people that want to get your book, they can either go to Amazon or they can...
an e-book, or if they just go to my website, penispowerbook.com.
Yeah,
I have another book, which I hope will be out in June. Very much the same sort of book. We did take the word penis, off the cover and tone the word penis down throughout the book to see if we could get a little bit more midstream media attention. I was reluctant to do it. I stand my ground, but public opinion seems to favor a more conservative approach.
Well, whatever approach, I am so delighted that you have been on this program, because we get the word out, Dr. D, and you and I get the word out, and your book is just incredible. So people listening, get his book, and thank you again, Dr. Danoff, for another hour of so much information and entertainment, too.
Well, thank you. You're very, very welcome, and it's a pleasure. We'll do it again.
We will. Thanks again. Bye-bye, everybody. Happy feet. Happy feet.